Welcome to It's All Political, the San Francisco Chronicle's political podcast. I'm Joe Garofoli, the Chronicle's senior political writer, and today in the podcast, we're talking with San Jose Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren. Actually, my friend Tal Copen, the Chronicle's Washington correspondent, is talking to Lofgren about her new role. It's nicknamed the Mayor of Capitol Hill. It's a behind-the-scenes, under-the-radar job that has a lot of power. Next, here's Tal talking to Zoe Lofgren on It's All Political.
So thank you for joining us.
Of course.
On what is always a busy day up in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Last week was a big week for you. The majority passed HR1.
So big week for the American people.
There you go. So why don't we start by telling us a little bit about HR1.
HR1 was a comprehensive reform bill that related to three broad areas. One, making it easier for Americans to register and cast their votes. Two, dealing with dark money and trying to make sure that there's disclosure. And three, broadening ethical standards in all three branches of government.
I feel like it's sort of an interesting role that maybe people back home don't necessarily understand up here, but you were sort of the quarterback for the bill, right?
Correct.
You didn't write it.
Well, I wrote part of it.
Right, but it was, it had Sarbanes' name on it, but you had a really important role.
Right, I managed the bill, and we did the markup in House Administration, which I chair, and people, House Administration Committees got interesting jurisdiction. I mean, people call you mayor of Capitol Hill because you're have that role, but we also have jurisdiction over campaign finance and elections, as well as, the Library of Congress and Smithsonian Institute and the like. So this was our campaign finance jurisdiction. A bunch of committees had hearings, but we did the markup, and we managed the measure on the floor and really troubleshot the measure as issues came up. We came up with solutions, which we included in the manager's memo.
And let's talk a little bit more about that. Just like I said, for folks back home who don't understand what managing a bill
mm-hmm.
means, I mean, it's a lot of work, right? You have
yes,
a lot
it is.
Of procedural things you have to do. So let's talk a little bit about what it means to get a bill from sort of conception to actual passage.
Well, one of the things, I'll give you an example of the part of the bill that I wrote. I have had a bill to require nonpartisan citizen commissions in every state for redistricting. California has it, Arizona has it, and really it's much better than partisan gerrymandering. And both parties do the gerrymandering. It's not just Democrats. I mean, and I think most people in both parties feel that the voters ought to be choosing their politicians instead of the reverse. So, okay, I took a look at the bill I introduced, a few years ago, and it needed some work. So I refined it. I got assistance from experts. The Brennan Center is a nonprofit organization that specializes in election law. They were very helpful. I reached out to the civil rights community and incorporated issues that they had, and it was better afterwards. When we held the markup in House Administration, some of the Republican members complained about Allen's. I don't think they're not for it. There was nothing we could have done that would have caused them to support the bill. But they did have certain pointed complaints that we took seriously. One of which was there is a pilot project for vouchers. There is also a voluntary small donor match program. And the source of funds, as originally drafted, was taxpayer funds. They strongly objected to that. And I thought, that's not all wrong, what they're saying. So we found a different source of funding. So there's no taxpayer money in those programs. People don't want the idea that your tax money would support a candidate you don't agree with. People don't like that. And understandably. So what we did was a small additional assessment on corporate wrongdoing and tax fraud. And so it's like the bad guys are funding the good, clean system. It's kind of elegant. They complained. and I think correctly, that the bill had a holiday for federal employees only. Well, you know, if we're going to have an election holiday, it should be for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so we deleted that. And we're going to work following the bill to see if we can find a holiday to swap for Election Day, because it's federal holidays are expensive. Mm-hmm. So that's something that will be follow-on. You know, all that happened before we went to the Rules Committee.
Right.
Then, you know, we worked with the Rules Committee to give them my opinion on what the rules, the amendments, and they allowed a huge number of amendments.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when you have the bill on the floor, you have hours of debate, which I manage.
Right. So, and I think, you know, part of this is what the American people don't necessarily see because, and, you know, I'll take some heat for this. We don't exactly cover the Rules Committee quite a bit,
right.
You know, but, and we're starting to have to write about procedure a little bit with these motions to
right.
recommit the Republicans, but there are a lot of procedural steps that go into mm-hmm. actually passing a bill that are somewhat pro forma, but still take a lot of work, right?
Well, and they're not always pro forma. I mean, we had, I think, 72 amendments in order on the bill, and some of them, you know, were minor, some of them weren't. And, you know, we debated them, considered them. They changed the bill, in many cases, for the better. You know, there were amendments to completely gut the bill that were turned down. So, you know, that's the way we're supposed to operate here, that, you know, people with different points of view representing different districts in the country weigh in to see where, you know, how the bill is going to be end up. And then, of course, at the end, we had the notorious motion to recommit, which was bogus. I mean, really, it was, you know, this was a bill using our Article 1, Section 4 jurisdiction about federal elections. And the motion to recommit was kind of a gotcha amendment that, you know, people who are not citizens shouldn't vote. Well, that's already law.
Mm-hmm.
And they even said so. In you know, federal law already prohibits non-citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So why are they doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the freshmen stood up and said, this is just a joke,
mm-hmm.
and we're not going to do it.
Yeah, and motions to recommit, just, you know, briefly for those who aren't familiar, it's one of these procedural steps. Every bill, sort of a last shot for the minority to introduce something to change the bill.
With 30 seconds notice.
Right, and you know, typically it's just sort of a everyone kind of votes by party line, but this has been tripping up some of the Democrats.
Well, and it has because, you know, many of our new members have never served in a legislative body before. They're not familiar with the procedures here yet. And they're not serious efforts to legislate.
Right.
They're just, you know, 30-second ambushes primarily to set up a vote for a political ad.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be treated in that manner because that's all they are.
And so turning to House Admin, you mentioned the,
mm-hmm.
the mayor of Capitol
right.
Hill. So what are some of the, you know, interesting things that as chairwoman of this committee you're going to get to work on?
Well, I mean, we're going to, yesterday we approved the interim regulations for paid internships.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we've been concerned about is that, you know, our budgets have declined over time. And costs have gone up, and so it's very difficult to find money in the budget to pay interns who aren't really doing a job. It's an educational program. So each office is going to have a modest sum to compensate with a stipend some interns. And that's important because not every young person who wants this educational experience has a family who can give them the money
mm-hmm.
to come and live here unpaid. So we want to broaden it and make sure that a lot of Americans from every economic segment of society has the same kind of opportunity. So that was a fun thing to do.
Yeah, and let's say I wanted to lobby for a blue bottle in the Capitol, that would be something you
that
would
also be something that, you know, I've had people say, can't we get the heat turned up? It turns out we can.
Well, there you go. Well, with more women serving in Congress, right, it's always too cold if you're wearing a dress,
too
right?
Too cold, and we also got menstrual products put in the ladies'
oh.
room at the request of some of the younger women. We now have a changing table in the ladies' room.
And these are important things when you think about it. I mean, you're managing a workplace of, I guess with staff, probably thousands of people.
Mm-hmm. That's over 10,000 people are on the Hill, counting everybody. And it's not like all political staff. I mean, there's janitors, there's construction guys. Yeah. I mean, there's plumbers. I mean, you got to keep the building going.
Multiple restaurants that are all staffed. Correct. And it's sort of a little city up
here. It is like a little city.
Yeah, with lots of tunnels for the winter and the humid summers. And another, leadership position you have, of course, is you're the chairwoman of the Immigration Subcommittee on the Judiciary Committee. And that's, I want to say obviously, maybe not obviously to everyone listening, but that's an issue you've worked on for a long time.
Yes,
you're an immigration attorney. I
taught immigration at Santa Clara Law School.
So, and the Democrats just introduced their new version of the DREAM Act, which
includes
TPS,
some other
immigrants. So what are some of the things you would like to see happen?
Well, I want to have top-to-bottom reform. The question is that achievable at this moment with Donald Trump as president and a Senate in Republican hands? So we're doing some assessments on what we can accomplish. I don't want to spin my wheels in something that can't happen right now. I think what we're looking at is what has an opportunity to be approved in this Congress, and if we could get a third or half of the job done and then finish it with a Democratic president, that would be an accomplishment compared to what we've done. We've been spinning our wheels for a long, long time. I have hopes that we can get the DREAM Act and TPS done. It's a very reasonable approach. I've introduced a bill with Dianne Feinstein in the Senate to legalize agricultural workers. Mm-hmm. And we're working to see, that's the baseline, to see if we can't get some agreement among the various stakeholders on additions to that bill. If we could get agreement, that would be a very important thing. Mm-hmm. I hope to do something. It's an arcane area, but it's important to the people involved. We allocate visas on the business side and family side, for that matter, based on where you're born. Mm-hmm. And so Iceland gets the same number of visas as India. Iceland has a population of 350,000 people. Mm-hmm. India has a population of 1.2 and a lot of computer scientists. Yeah. So we have a huge backlog from India. And so people come over on a temporary visa and then they're in limbo for a long time, which isn't good for them. It's not good for their families. It's not good for our country. And so we've got a bill that's got broad bipartisan support to allocate the visas just on merit, mm-hmm. not on where you're born. And that it wouldn't fix everything, but it will help even out this kind of disparity that we have.
Well, and this is hugely important for the Bay Area, right, where you have high-skilled visa holders. There's so many issues with how long they have to wait for green cards. Their kids age out.
That's
and
exactly
have to leave
right.
the country. We now see the administration moving forward with their plan to strip work authorization for the spouses of these high skilled visas.
It's a field day for Canadian recruiters, I'll tell you.
So, I believe, if I recall, that even last Congress, that bill had enough co-sponsors
to
pass.
It did. It had over 300, but they never really moved it. So we've got over 200 now. We just introduced 219, enough to pass it on the floor. We believe we'll get more. We're going to have a hearing on that in the subcommittee in the near future, and I hope that we can move that. Mm-hmm. There are some other things I'd like to accomplish as well. Sometimes these things may seem minor, but they really matter a lot to people. One of the things I would like to get some bipartisan support for is altering something we did that really didn't work out well in the 1996, which is to impose a bar or an exile on people who are otherwise eligible for a visa if they entered without inspection. It's really unequal, because if you come to the U.S., overstay your visa, and marry an American citizen, you can become a legal resident. Right. But if you walk in, marry an American citizen, then you can't. You have to leave for 10 years. Well, no one's going to do that. Your kids are going to be teenagers by the time you get back. So If we could alter that for the spouses of American citizens, that would be a good thing to do.
Yeah, and this is a really big part of the DACA debate that sort of gets glossed over. But, you know, you hear from a lot of people, well, why can't they just, you know, wait in line like the rest of us? And it's because...
Well, we have created policies that promote illegality. Mm-hmm. The federal government should not be in the role of breaking up marriages. I mean, that's not a proper role for the federal government. So if you've got an American citizen who married someone, what we're really saying is the marriage has to break up or the American has to go live in another country. Well, that's not what we should be doing. We should allow families, to flourish here in the U.S.
And there's one other leadership position you hold that I wanted to ask you about.
Only
which
one?
Is, well, but you, at least one, let's say. You are the chair of the California Democratic
That's
Caucus.
Correct.
So what does that entail?
It's really an honor. It's an elected position, elected by the other Californians. And, we meet every week when we're in session at lunch on Wednesday, which we meet today. We do a variety of things. We try and reach consensus on issues when we can. It's a focal point for connecting with California interests, including local governments, state governments, sometimes nonprofits. I think we have the LA City Council coming in today to visit with us. The governor was here a couple weeks ago.
Oh, did he come to the lunch?
Not to the lunch. We had a separate meeting. Sometimes we just get to know each other better. Mm-hmm. So it's a great delegation now, 46 strong.
The biggest.
The biggest. The Democrats are bigger than the entire delegation of any other state. And we're 20% of the Democratic caucus.
And one thing I've been wondering about the California delegation, is there a Northern California, Southern California rivalry?
Not really.
Not really?
No, it's interesting. I know that historically that was true, but that has changed a lot over time. It's a very diverse delegation. I think that we tend to agree on most matters. Obviously, there are things that are regional. But for example, when we had a problem with the Trump administration on a transit project in the Bay Area, all the Southern Californians rallied around as well. And when there's an issue, I mean, there's a disaster in Southern California, we rally around. So we mm-hmm. try and, stick up for the whole state.
What's it like having the speaker be from the delegation?
Well, it's great. She comes to almost all our meetings. And, it's not the case for every delegation that you can sit and have lunch with the Speaker of the House once a week and bring up things of interest.
But she also seems pretty good. She keeps an eye on California, but she also seems like she tries not to favor them too much.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But, we have 7 new members.
Yeah.
None of them has served in public office before. So they all bring something, special. I mean, they're smart and have great experiences, but not a legislative experience.
That's fascinating. So none of them have served in a legislative body before. Mm-hmm.
And so, they're bringing new views, and it's been fun to work with them. Several of them have ended up in key positions. Mm-hmm. Katie Hill is the liaison to the leadership. T.J. Cox is chairing a subcommittee on oversight. So it's great.
Can I ask which of them have particularly impressed you?
No, you can't. I mean, you can ask, but I'm not going to say. They all bring something different.
Yeah. I've been generally watching the freshmen. I've been struck mm-hmm. by how many of the new members are really, they've hit the ground running at hearings.
Yep.
They know how to answer. They know how to ask questions. They know how to answer our questions from the press. It's mm-hmm. been actually kind of surprising how many of them seem ready to go.
No, they're very smart. They're very, it's really an impressive group. But as I say, I mean, on the floor, they've got something to say, but they might not know what are the words you say to get recognized
right.
by the speaker. So you help them out on little things like that.
So circling back, is that the type of thing that, as admin chair that you can...
You can help people on things that, it's not like they need to know the policy issues, But some of the arcane house issues, yeah, you can help them on that.
Is that the type of thing, you know, I feel like the California delegation, in addition to the freshmen, has a lot of veteran members too, folks who have been out here a really long time. So what are some of the advantages, you know, as Dems retake the majority after a fair number of years out of it?
We've got a mix. I mean, we have several chairpersons. Myself, chair of Veterans Affairs, chair of Financial Services, and then a bunch of chairs of subcommittees. So that's, you know, gives us a leg up in terms of forming policy. But it's also something that has challenged us that we're working on. We've got people who've been here, you know, on the senior level, some in between, and brand newbies. Mm-hmm. So how do we help our newbies get the experience they need to take a leadership role sooner rather than later? They're capable, but how do we help them find their sea legs in the Congress? So that's something we're actively working on, because it's important not only because they are very impressive, but we want California to have the benefit, and the country to have the benefit of their expertise.
Well, as Nancy Pelosi often says, as California goes, so
correct.
Goes the
nation. Correct.
So perhaps as the caucus goes, so goes the broader caucus. So put you on the spot for a final thought. What are you most looking forward to next as the majority sort of gets running?
I really would like to get some progress made on immigration. We're doing a lot of damage to the country by failing to take very simple steps to reform the laws that are not serving us well. And I know I'm going to be frustrated. We're not going to be able to do everything I want to do, but it really is doing tremendous damage to the country, and I hope that we can make some progress there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank
for joining
you.
Us.
This was fun.
I'd like to thank you all for listening. I'd like to thank Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren for being on today's podcast. I'd like to thank Tal Copen for taking the reins today. I'd like to thank Libby Coleman for, again, wonderfully producing today's podcast. And remember, whether you're the mayor of Capitol Hill or sharing an apartment with five buddies, it's all political. It's All Political is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Audrey Cooper is our editor-in-chief. Our music, our theme music that we have, is Cattle Call. That's written by Randy Clark and performed by Randy Clark and Crow Song. If you like this show, subscribe, rate, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. For more great journalism like this, subscribe to the San Francisco Chronicle at sanfranciscochronicle.com/subscribe. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Garofoli. Thanks.